Yeah, my name is Joe Chow, Mayor of Addison. I'm so glad I have the opportunity to welcome all of you and recognize also my three council members, Kevin, Ivan Hughes, Tom Brown, and Laurie Ward. Give them a round of applause. Thank you. I am so honored to introduce our ambassador from Italy to the United States, Armando and Varecchio, right? Right pronunciation. You know, I traveled to Italy 3 times, so I've been to a lot of different Italian cities, and such as Florence, Milan, and Venice. I know Ambassador was born and raised in Venice, right? So I love Venice. I've been there 3 times, and I've been to Pisa, Genova, and of course Rome. So even I went to Sicily, Amalfi. I was asked. Since I like cruise, then after cruise, then I just pop up the speed train and go to every city. So that's a great country, and I had a great experience in Italy. So I'd like to just introduce our ambassador. We are really honored to host His Excellency Armando Varecchio today. Just a few days after his 2 years anniversary, when he presented his diplomatic credentials as Ambassador of Italy to Washington. And just 3 days after Italy's general election, so after obtaining a master's degree in international relations from the University of Padua, Ambassador Varecchio immediately joined the Foreign Service in 1986, rising to the rank of ambassador in 2014. His steady rise began with a post in Budapest as a young diplomat during the dissolution of the Warsaw Pact and the Soviet Union. He went on to serve in a long list of prestigious postings that include serving as chief of staff to the Minister of Foreign Affairs, diplomatic advisor to President of the European Commission, personal representative of the G7, G8 summits in Okinawa, Geneva, and Kanasnakis, and ambassador of Serbia. Please join me in giving a warm welcome to His Excellency Armando Varecchio.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor, for your very kind introduction. Thank you to the Force and Fair Council of Dallas for this invitation. Grazie, Jim, per le tue parole in perfetto italiano. Ho molto apprezzato. Dear friends, you're right. this invitation comes after years of my presenting credentials to then President Obama, 2 years in my tenure as ambassador of Italy to the United States, and just a few hours after the general elections in Italy. I can tell you that these couple of years have been very interesting for me. I'm ambassador to Washington, but I keep traveling extensively the country. I try to take any opportunity to go beyond what we call in Washington the Beltway, the highway encompassing the city, because I think that it is important to go and listen, to understand what is going on in this very, very large, big country, and also being so fortunate to be the ambassador of a country like Italy. You know, Italy is a sort of magic. It's a small country. We are 60 million people. We have been around a long time, believe me. And the fact that a country with no natural resources, blessed by this unique position in the world, which is in the midst of Mediterranean, but, you know, surrounded by so many different civilizations, cultural languages, religions, eventually managed to live a unique foothold in history. because Italy has always been a main player on the international scene. These days, sometimes I smile when I listen to the word globalization, as globalization is something that has been invented recently. Believe me, globalization has always been there. We've always been global. My ancestors from Venice used to trade with every possible market in the world. They were very successful business people. They were very successful traders. But because they were Italians, they have a natural sense of beauty. So when they came back to Venice, they built beautiful palazzis. They invited the best architects of those days, the best painters, the best sculptors, and they left this unique heritage that we now can admire. So globalization has always been part of our life. Italy has been and still is one of the largest trading countries in Europe. We are one of the largest trading partners of the United States. Thinking about Italy, you think about history, about heritage, about fashion, about great food, about beauty. But you know that out of the $50 billion of Italian export to the United States, the first component is machine. So we export tools. Our main players in trade between Italy and the United States are engineers. So this just to give you a sense of what we are and who we are. This has been true with all the different states of this great country, but I'm very pleased today to be here in Texas. Because today, Texas is home of an increasing number of Italian companies which are looking at opportunities created by an economy that exceeds many sovereign states in dimension and dynamism. Texas is one of the main players on the global stage. Oil and gas has, of course, been the leading sector, but Texas is much more than this. And our companies are eager to seize the extraordinary opportunities disclosed by Texas' economy, but its high degree of openness to global markets. So that's why I'm very pleased here today to talk to you about Italy, about Europe, and about our common challenges. The relations between Italy and the United States, of course, are very strong, traditional. They cover many areas. And by the way, this country still has Italy in its own birth certificate. Amerigo Spucci is this young guy from Florence who started to set the sail and eventually left his name to this part of the world. A fellow explorer from Genova, whose memory and legacy these days some tend to neglect, opened the way and eventually was one of the major players of globalization. Today there are those who want to denounce the fact that Christopher Columbus did not discover America. He's right. America was there. So this land was there. But what Christopher Colombo did was to finally connect worlds that were apart. So in a way, he was someone that opened new opportunities for all of us. He made our world closer and somewhat smaller. That's why it is important to cherish and honor his heritage. I'm very proud that this gentleman came from Italy. Not from Venice, from Genova, but still, you know, a proud Italian. More recently, the strong and long-standing bond between Italy and the United States is encompassed by a common alliance. The Atlantic Alliance, which next year turns 70. And 70, as we say today, is the new 50. And so that's why this Atlantic Alliance has never been so vibrant and so important. This alliance's unique position of political will and military strength, made it all a keystone of transatlantic security after the war, helping to ensure the longest period of peace in Europe and prosperity of the transatlantic community. NATO can help our Mediterranean neighbors increase their resilience and capabilities in the field of defense through strategic approach, partnership, capacity building. And this day, it is particularly important that the two main components of this alliance, United States and Europe, work hand in hand and stay the course. This is something that is particularly important for us in Europe, but at the same time, we do acknowledge goes to the credit of the United States. Nobody, certainly not in Italy, forgets the unique debt we owe to the United States. The reason why we are prosperous these days, the reason why we are free democracies, is because many decades ago, young American men came to Europe to save us. This happened twice in a single century, in 1917 and then eventually in 1940. And this is something that gives us a strong sense of bond that we'll never forget. That's why we cherish NATO, and we do consider that as Europeans, we have to do more to increase our contribution to the alliance. We are doing also what we can to increase the European component of defense with a new concept. The starting point is that Europeans must take greater responsibility for their security. One of the ideas is to strengthen the structures responsible for planning and conduct of operations, both civilian and military, and to provide incentives for enhanced cooperation among member states. But while we do this in Europe, at the same time, it is important that here, on this side of the shore, the United States realized that its greatest asset is the network of alliances that the United States has managed to create. There's no other country like the United States that enjoys this huge network of alliances and partnership. And this is the best way that the United States has to increase and protect its own national security. China has no partners. China has no alliances. Only the United States has this huge network. And this is something that should be considered and cherished, because this is something that the United States is deeply engaged in promoting, and definitely as Europe we want to cherish and promote. Europe, at the same time, these days is confronted with new challenges and with new threats. We do realize that. We have been building a great, unique area of peace and stability. What our founding fathers in the early 50s, in the aftermath of this huge, terrible tragedy of World War II, managed to create and leave us, is something that is under threat these days. So it is important that we work together, because this is something that doesn't come for free. We are engaged in doing so. Italy, proud itself of being a founding member of the EU, the treaty that really is at the basis of our European Union, was signed in Rome in 1957. This also has, you know, historic and symbolic meaning. Rome being such an old city, a beacon of democracy. So we did so because we wanted really to leave a mark in history. But these days we do realize that it is important to increase our engagement, and also it is important to engage our political determination to protect Europe. You know, it has been very kindly reminded here that in my career, started back in '86, I've been devoted many many years in working for the EU, in trying to defend Italian interests, being a civil servant of Italy, but also building something bigger, which was a more integrated Europe. And I'm very proud of what I did. Together with my colleagues, we have been taking many important decisions. We have been trying to increase the numbers of members of the EU. When I first moved to Brussels, we were 11 members of the EU. Eventually, we moved to 15, and then to 25, and now we are 28. So this shows that there is a dynamic there, that there is a growing number of countries who think that they can be better by being member of a larger club, a club of democratic countries, a club of affluent countries, a club of countries where everybody can preserve its own identity while at the same time being part of a greater project. This is something that has never been experienced before in history. You know that we are all ancient nations in Europe, very proud of our history, very proud of our roots. The fact that we decided to join our forces and to create something bigger is something that should not be underestimated. And this project today is in great jeopardy. There are those who tend to cast doubts on the vitality of the project, and there are those who decided to leave. For the first time ever, instead of having countries entering into the EU, we had a major country decided to leave. And I refer to Britain, that decided to initiate a process that in our horrible jargon we call Brexit. So Britain leaving the EU, taking the exit door. Of course, we respect this decision. This is a decision taken by British citizens, so this is the way democracy works, and we have to protect and respect this. I do think that if the referendum might happen again these days, maybe a larger number of British citizens might have second thoughts. But, you know, history cannot be rewritten. History is there. History only goes ahead, never comes back. So a decision has been taken, and I will leave it to that. Negotiations are underway. They are not easy, believe me, because even with a country like Britain, that in a number of areas, what we call common policies in recent years, decided nonetheless to preserve its own national prerogative, having what we call opting out of options. But still, even the case of Britain, the level of integration is so intense, so deep, that to unwind all this will be quite difficult and cumbersome. But in a few weeks, our leaders will be meeting in Brussels, and they will initiate the 2 years transition time. From that moment onward, we will have 2 years to pave the way for a new covenant between the EU and Britain. And then we'll see whether this will be positive or not. But what is for sure is the fact that even in the remaining countries of the EU, we'll have to realize that the reason why one of the major countries of the EU decided to take the exit door should make ourselves think that probably we should do things better. We should be more open in our decision-making process. We should be more accountable. And we should give more attention to what our citizens are requesting from us. As you see, these are really, as we say in Washington these days, interesting times. There are times when history happens very, very rapidly. Things are unfolding in a way that does not necessarily reproduce usual ways and usual patterns. This is particularly true for us in Europe. You know, we are more traditional than you are here in the United States. We are more accustomed to accepting new endeavors, to always starting from scratch, always trying to find new allies. In Europe, we carry the burden of history, so we move at a slower pace. By the way, you know, having thousands of years of history on our back sometimes can be I wouldn't say a curse, but something that, in a way, does not allow you to move at the same pace as you're doing here. But I think that in the case of the EU, it is important that our younger generation, those who are entitled to be the main players of our days, do realize that what we have been accomplished in so many decades is something that has to be cherished and protected. Because while we are very proud of our identities as European countries, while we are very proud of what has been accomplished in so many years of history, at the same time, we know that we have made huge and terrible mistakes in our history, and we certainly don't want these mistakes to happen again. I mentioned the relation between Europe and the United States, a relation which is unique, and I mentioned the Atlantic Alliance. And then I would like to share with you some ideas of the importance of this cooperation when it comes to security. We are confronted these days, particularly in our part of the world, with greater challenges. Italy is blessed with this unique position in the heart of that beautiful sea, which is the Mediterranean, a cradle of so many civilizations, an area where really history made out really at the center of an area where you had this interconnection. And we have always been able to absorb all of this while at the same time having dialogue with people of different languages, different religions, different cultures. But these days, the Mediterranean is coming again an area where you have tensions, you have confrontations. I would like to mention here two main issues. One is the growing risk posed by terrorism to our national borders. This is something that, of course, is one of the major concerns of our authorities. We have to be very careful. We have to be very, very engaged in protecting our borders. Around Italy, we have again a number of very, very tragic conflicts. Syria, we have problems in the beautiful country that we know very well, which is Lebanon. We have tensions in the Gulf states. We have a situation of instability in a country which is so important for us, such a great, beautiful country, which is Egypt. We have, just a few miles across the Italian shore, a country that is so weak, with a very weak central authority, with the spreading of violence, of terrorism, which is Libya, a country that we know very well. And we have, you know, all these instability in areas that are really, really few miles across Italy. That's why we have to be engaged, we have to work together, and we have to increase our cooperation. The second issue is something that has structural and contingent problems. And this issue can be defined in many ways, but to put it simple, I would say migration. You know, it might sound quite odd to talk about migration in a country of migrants like the United States. But for us in Europe, the situation is somewhat different. Europe has always been an area of the world of people moving out, of migrants going out. There are so many Europeans that move here to the shore, including many fellow Italians. You know that there are around 20 million American citizens who claim Italian descent. So we know what migration is and how important it is. in recent years, we have seen a trend going in the opposite direction. Millions of people entering into Europe. To give you a size, to give you a sense of a perspective, just to find a similar time in history when such a high number of people entered the EU, you have to get back to the end of the Roman Empire with the barbaric invasions of millions of people entering into Europe. Just to give you the size. We had two major waves of migrants, those entering into Europe, particularly, you know, refugees coming from countries like Afghanistan and Syria, entering through the so-called Balkan routes, so Turkey, the Balkans, and then eventually Central Europe. And then, more recently, we have this trend of migrants coming to Italy from Libya. They're not Libyans, because Libyans do not emigrate. But they come from Libya, and mainly they come from Sahel area, so south of Sahara, and countries like the Horn of Africa and Nigeria. So millions of people arriving. On top of that, we have potentially millions of people who want to move into Europe from Africa. We know that because we know that they're ready to leave. This is a tragic phenomenon. You can apply different categories. You can call these people in different ways. At the end of the day, they're human beings. The human beings that, whatever the reason of their departing, ultimately they want to build a better future for themselves, for their children, for their families. So, which is something that we perfectly understand. At the same time, this trend is posing enormous strain to our communities, to our forces, particularly those who come from Libya. They have to cross the sea. They are smuggled by terrible traders of slaves, frankly, because those who trade them are those who are paid to do so. So they're criminal gangs who really trade human beings. And these people arrive, when they arrive in Italy, and they are saved by Italian Navy, by the Italian Coast Guard, and they brought back to Italy to give them shelter, to give them support, and to actually save their lives, because once they cross the sea on board these rotten boats, they run really the risk of their lives. They are divided into different categories. Those who are entitled to receive what we call asylum, because they escape from wars, they escape from persecution. And those who are not entitled to receive asylum because they are so-called, with this terrible definition that trying to characterize human beings into different labels, economic migrants. So this is creating enormous problems in terms of finance, in terms of burden for our communities who have to give them shelter, who have to assist them. And this is also, unfortunately, creating political waves in Europe. Because you have a number of parties, movements, who, of course, tend to claim that all those who come are potential terrorists, all those who come are invaders. They tend to change our identity, the way our societies work. And these arguments, I have to say, are becoming more and more popular in our communities. So this is a challenge that we have to face. As Italians, we try to act in, first, providing them security, saving their lives, trying to see what we can to accommodate, but while at the same time encourage those who are not entitled to stay to come back to their countries. At the same time, we have increased our cooperation with Africa because we don't want Africa simply to lose all its potentials. We do think that Africa is a continent rich in opportunities, so we should encourage Africa to do the most to engage in a process of development that eventually might create the conditions for those people to stay and carry on with their lives. So there is something that we are doing on a short term and something that we are doing to increase cooperation in the future. Of course, we cannot do this alone. We have to rely on cooperation with the fellow European countries. This is not necessarily easy, because there are countries in Europe who prefer to turn their back and carry on with their business and leaving Italy taking care of the problem. But we do think that this has to be continued, because Europe cannot be divided by geography. Europe has to be considered as an integrated area. This topic of migration is one of the areas that tell us that when it comes to facing the most important challenges of our time, there is no single country that can act on its own. All the major challenges of our times can only be tackled and faced by increasing cooperation and increasing common understanding, particularly among those countries who share values and who are democracies, in times when, unfortunately, democracies are shrinking in numbers, because you have a number of countries that were promising to embark in the process of building their institutions that, unfortunately, are heading in another direction. So increasing cooperation, increasing trade, and try to avoid the risk of trade wars. This is important because globalization, the way we have seen it, has been built through the opportunity to exchange goods, exchange services, allowing the free flows of ideas and promoting cooperation. As Europe and the United States, we have been benefited the most from this, and we do consider that the reasons that have suggested promoting those values are still very, very strong these days. A word, finally, on the importance of promoting trade in times when there are some ideas of raising barriers again. We do think that this is counterproductive. This does not serve the need to rebalance trade. Trade has to be balanced, for sure, even if all those who have been studying trade suggest that in the end, trade is by definition reciprocal, because the moment you exchange goods and services, you have people who promote growth, and eventually they might become new buyers. But it is important to resist these temptations, because we are very fortunate these days that the global economy, is growing. After years of recessions, Even in Europe, which has been rather sluggish in recent years, certainly in Italy, we are on a positive trend. The economy is growing. You have new jobs. This is positive. So we don't want new instability in trade to cast any cloud that might eventually affect this trend of economic growth. So in the end, as Italy, as ambassador of Italy, I'm bringing here the voice of an old, wise country. We are active citizens of the world. We've always been very much in favor of open connections. We don't fear others because we are very proud of ourselves. We don't fear what is different from us, because we are very strong and solid in our identity. We know what Italy is. We know the role of Italy in the world. We are not shy about this. We are not humble. We are very, very proud and somewhat, you know, determined to see that Italy remains a major player in the world. But we know that we are not alone. Wherever I go, I've been traveling the world extensively. I've been traveling all the continents. I've been visiting so many countries. And wherever I've been, I found Italians, you know, trading, Italians doing their business, while at the same time being perfectly integrated in their communities. So being very proud of their history, of their tradition, but at the same time being proud members of their communities. And this is what we are. So I'm very glad that out of the many places that I've been fortunate to visit, today I'm here in Dallas, Texas. This is a great state, a state where I can see many, many opportunities, beautiful nature. Even here, I can see many, many proud Italians, and I salute them, and I'm very proud of what they're doing, and I'm glad to have this opportunity to share with you some thoughts, and of course, I'm more than ready to answer some of your questions. Thank you.
We have a tradition to give a student the first question, and Ayev, who's a member of the Junior World Affairs Council at Brighter Horizons, I'm going to sort of expand on your question a bit, because she asked about Italy's role with refugees, and you touched on it, but you said something. You said there's short-term and long-term strategy, and it strikes me that Italy or Libya is faced with somewhat the same type of problem that Mexico has of migrants coming through Central America. You have the migrants coming through Africa. Italy has been criticized. It has been reported that Italy has paid money to some of the militias. That's been denied. So could you perhaps expand on this?
Yeah. Thank you. Certainly, Libya is south of Italy, the same way as Mexico is south of the United States. But, you know, the difference couldn't be bigger. Mexico is a strong country. Mexico is a democratic country with viable institutions. Fortunately, Libya is none of that.
My point was the migrants coming through Mexico.
Yeah. Right. So the reason why Libya has become the gateway to Europe is because there is this lack of authorities, a very, very poor and weak central government. We're working with the authorities. We are increasing our cooperation. We are sending their assistance. We are providing them with any possible means. But we cannot intervene in Libya. We cannot enter into Libya because this would be considered by Libya as an act of, you know, war entering into that country. So we have to rely on the Libyan ability to better control their country. You know, knowing a little bit that country, Libya has never been a strong nation. Libya has always been a country made of tribes. So has never been, you know, a democracy. Tripoli has always been a very weak capital of one of the regions of the country. The real power has always been rested in Libya with tribes, with warlords. So if you want to talk to somebody in Libya, you have to talk to them. So this is why we have been left with no choice but try to discuss with them. With the mayors, we call them mayors, Mr. Mayor, but, you know, a little bit different. Okay, let's call them mayors, you know, of the southern towns of Libya. Try to give them opportunities and means to have alternative opportunities for their communities. So they don't have to trade human beings. They have other opportunities to provide wealth to their communities. It's like, in a way, what you've been doing, the international community, if in Afghanistan, where the most effective source of income has always been poppies production. But not because they love flowers. We know what we do with poppies seeds. Okay? So you have to encourage them to do something different. Because families have to live anyway. They have to have a dinner at home at night. But maybe they might have different sources to put some food on their table. So this is what we are doing there. It's a long, whole process. But there is no alternative. There is no alternative.
Let's open it up. And if you'd please identify yourself and wait for a microphone. Anika, right there, one of our directors.
Hello, my name is Anika Kale at Commerce Street Capital and one of the directors for the World Affairs Council. Thanks so much for being here today. What are your thoughts on the results of the election in Italy's ability to, I guess, remain in the EU and also address the debt situation?
No, the reason, the answer is very, very simple. I have no doubt that Italy is going to remain in the EU. There's no one really in Italy suggesting Italy to go anywhere else than the EU. Even those who were advocating some years ago a more dramatic attitude towards the EU now are coming to their senses. What is sure is the fact that there is a need to have a greater voice in the decision-making process in Brussels. This is something that our communities feel very, very strongly about it. I was mentioning this morning that having worked many years in Brussels, I perfectly realized that there is a need to increase accountability. We have to be more open in our decision-making process. Our communities have to be more engaged because decisions taken in Brussels affect everybody's life. So there is a need to increase transparency. That for sure. But, you know, Italy is and will remain a strong member of the EU. When it comes to the debt, you're right. Italy has been having this very high national debt, under 30% of GDP. Our debt has two main features. First, more than 90% of Italian debt is owned by Italian households. So you don't have foreign countries having Italian debt. So this is important because, you know, we care and about it. Second, and this is a financial point, the Italian national debt is substantially sound. So there is no increase at all. It has remained consistent for a number of years. If you look, for example, to the French debt or the German debt, the other two major economies in the EU, the ratio of increase of their national debt has been dramatic in recent years. They don't have under 30%. Germans, if you think it's under 30%, for them, you know that in German the word debt is guilt. So for them, having been dealt is like being guilted. You know. So this has to do with the culture and history. In the case of Italy, is very high but solid and sound. For sure, what we have to do is to embark in a process of decreasing of this level, because this is not good for the economy, and we want to have a wealthier process. So the new government will be confronted with this major task of further reducing. But as always, it's much easier to reduce debt in times of economic growth. So the fact that now we are consistently on a positive trend gives us hope.
We have time for one more question. Yes, sir. And if you'll, as Alana races over.
I'm Dick Grote. Have you met and gotten to know Beppe Grillo, the founder of the Five Star Movement, and what kind of man is he?
That's a good last question.
Unfortunately, I haven't met Beppe Grillo. It's not the kind of people that I usually deal with. But I met the leader of the party, Luigi Di Maio, who, by the way, came to Washington back in November. He had meetings State Department. He had meetings in Congress. So we had good conversations. And I think that while Beppe Grillo is being a comedian and being someone, that not necessarily has to be taken by his words, I found Luigi Di Maio a very determined politician. So he is now managed to get this incredible score in his party. More than 10 million Italians voted for his party. So I think that this shows that he's a strong, determined leader, and we'll see what he will do in case the President of the Republic decides to ask him to form a government. I don't know. It will depend on the president, so I don't want to prejudge his decision, but we're all very curious.
Thank you very much, Your Excellency. We have a few special presentations. First, on behalf of the members of the World Affairs Council,
okay.
Our tie there, and you'll note that the cities that are represented are ones that have diplomatic representation in North Texas, and we look forward to when Rome is on that tie. And for you, madam, we also have the World Affairs Council scarf. But now,
Thank you. Most importantly,
I want to introduce Beth Huddleston, who's the chief of protocol for the city of Dallas, often, I think, for the region, and also the executive vice president of the World Affairs Council, who will handle special presentation.
Well, obviously, this is a topic of great interest as we have a sold-out capacity here. So it is with great pleasure that I bring up one of our very favorite city councilmen from Dallas, Rick Callahan, to do the honors.
Just have a few comments. Welcome, everyone. And benvenuti to the ambassador and senora. And I just want to thank you, Ambassador Varacchio, for such an informative presentation. I think we all can agree with that. We're really honored to have you here in the City of Dallas to share your wisdom and insights with the community. City of Dallas has a tradition for our most honored guests to bestow upon them a special honor. So with great pleasure, and on behalf of the City of Dallas and Mayor Michael Rollins, I would like to make you an honorary citizen of Dallas, and I will read to you what that means to us. And he's going to become a Texan on top of that. So how about that? So you have to learn to say howdy. So this is what the honorary citizenship means to me. Greetings, be it hereby known that on Wednesday, March 7th, 2018, His Excellency Armando Varecchio has been made an honorary citizen of Dallas, Texas, and under this charter shall hold and enjoy a place of high esteem in the minds and the hearts of the people of the city of Dallas. So with my, it's my great pleasure to present to you this, senor.
Thank you.
Hanging on your wall, gladly there. Somewhere hopefully in Rome or Venice or some of the other places you have. And I just had another couple of real quick comments. You know, the Italian people have been very influential even within the city of Dallas, the district that I represent. We're fortunate to have Lucien LaBarba here. And my mother, she grew up in that part of town, what we call Pecan Heights, which is our kind of next door neighbor in my district. So they've been here since about 1900, I think, your family. So they've had a great influence on the city of Dallas, as many Italians have. And you guys just keep on knocking it out of the park.
Thank
Welcome
you.
There.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you very much. I really thank you for this great honor to be an honorary citizen of the great city of Dallas. And I reciprocate here with something which for us, of course, is very symbolic and close to my heart, which is the flag of the Republic of
very
Italy.
Very famous. Absolutely. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I think that probably puts us around 40-plus flags, I think, that we'll have in our flag room, and that's very important. Isn't that beautiful?
Let's see. Let's get this.
Tricolore. Viva Italia.
There we go. Sorry.
There we go.
All right. Now we can take pictures.
Probably backwards, it would represent another country.
Okay, good.
I was proud that our Boy Scouts last night, I told them that I was going to make this presentation today, and we had the flags of the world in the room, and one of our Boy Scouts was able to go up and say, that's the Italian flag right
Scary.
There. So I owe him some kind of a gift. I don't know what it's going to be.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Thank you again for being here.
And ask if anybody wants a picture.
I apologize. The ambassador is going to have to dash very quickly. We're going to do one picture with the students, and then we're off to another meeting.
Okay.
So thank you again for being here.
Okay.